That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
The Incomparable, number 715, May 2024.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Incomparable. I'm your host, Jason Snell. This episode is about nominees for the Hugo and Nebula Awards. That's right, it's book club season. Book club forced march through the most beloved of, by some people, books of the year of last year. Boy, I could have done this better. Hey, we're going through the shortlist of the Hugo and Nebula nominees for novels. That's what we're doing. Second time. Perfect. No notes. Let me introduce my panelists before I tell you what books we read for this episode. Aline Sims is here. Hello, Aline.
I read two books.
Two books out of three that we're covering. That's okay.
Uh-oh.
It's okay. It's okay. It's all right. Scott McNulty is here. Hi, Scott.
I read three books.
Yay, three.
Ah.
Do I hear four? Because only three were assigned. Erica Ensign, how many books did you read?
Well, I did actually read four, but I did read these three.
These three.
That's important.
Okay,
yes.
That's good. I knew you were going to do that. How did I know? How did I know? And Heather Berberet is here. Hi, Heather. How many books did you read?
Well, so if I read one whole book into half books, does that equal two books?
Oh
no! I'm
book
sorry.
Math. It's tricky.
I'm sorry to say no, but that's okay. You know
okay.
what? We try, and one of the things that we learn is that sometimes we don't succeed, and that is meaningful in and of itself.
That's true. I think when more people should stop reading books that they aren't enjoying.
I agree.
That's my hot take.
I agree. I think the review, I mean, we're going to talk about books that people here didn't finish, and I think that is in itself a review, because there are reasons why you didn't finish, and one of the services we provide is to get people excited about books that they might want to read, and we also might warn you off of a book that sounds like it's not your jam, and that's all fine, too. Mm-hmm. It's okay. All right, well, the books that we're talking about in this episode, there were, I think, nine books nominated between the two lists. So we read three of them for this episode. They are Witch King by Martha Wells, author of the Murderbot series, Starter Villain by John Scalzi, famed, much awarded science fiction author John Scalzi, and Translation State, a novel in the ancillary universe from famed award-winning author Anne Leckie. Those were the books that we were assigned for this episode of the book club. What should we start with? What do people think? What do you think? Let's start with Witch King, because I know a lot of people didn't finish it.
I was going to suggest that just because it's at the top of my list. I don't know why it's at the top of my list here physically, because it's the most recent one that I read, I think.
This Witch King and Starter Villain and Translation State, all three of these books, I believe I have talked about in our What Are We Reading segment in previous episodes. But then they got nominated for awards. What you gonna do? Witch King, Martha Wells, it's a fantasy novel told in two time frames about essentially a godlike being who is basically killed, but comes back and seeks revenge. And I believe what I said in our in the episode where I talked about this is it's actually the kind of character that in most books would probably be the villain, but in this book is the hero. question mark protagonist, at least. And it is, yeah, so set in a fantasy world. And this is, I believe Martha Wells was also going to get nominated for her latest Murderbot novel, and she declined that, but she did accept a nomination for Witch King. So she's saying, why don't you vote for that one for an award instead? But I know that some people really struggle with this, and I sort of want to start there because I think I know Aline gave up on it. I don't know how everybody else did. I'm pretty sure Scott and I finished it.
I finished it.
Oh, okay. And Heather, how did you do with Witch King?
I would have finished it. I just ran out of time.
Okay.
I would have finished it, yeah. All right. I mean, I will finish it.
All right.
Just not before we talk about
Instead
it.
Instead of a DNF, that was a W. The WF, which is will finish it.
Will finish.
Yeah. Maybe. So, Aline, why don't we start with you? I know you really struggled with this one.
Okay.
So go for it.
So, I, as regular listeners to Book Club episodes know, I do a lot of my reading via audiobook. And I do almost all of my awards reading via audiobook. So that's just kind of what I default to with books. And it's a vibe thing, right? So I started Witch King. I was listening to it. I was like, nope, this is not working for me as an audiobook, which I purchased. So then I purchased the ebook version.
Oh, no. That's commitment.
And I was like, this will be better because there was something about the narrator that just, it wasn't working for me. Like he sounded bored and I was like, well, that's no good. And I read the ebook or I started the ebook and it was also not working for me. Like, I don't know what happened. It's like my brain went completely smooth when I tried to intake this book and it just slid off my brain. So I managed to get to 25%, went to sleep, got up the next morning, picked it up again, had no clue what was happening. I'd retained nothing. Started rereading it. I reread it from the beginning.
Oh, wow.
Got to 25%. I was like, I kind of remember what's happening. Got to 54%. I was at the point where I started crying when I thought about reading it.
Oh, wow.
And so I was like, I'm not finishing it.
You are beyond the point where you should have abandoned it. Don't let books make you cry. I mean, unless it's sad in the book. But don't make the reading of a book make you cry.
I really try to finish all of the books. Typically, I am an abandon early and often reader. If it's not clicking for me, I have no problem starting a new book. There are too many good books in the world to struggle. I really try to read the entirety of the books we do for the podcast. And I could not do it. I was bored. Mm-hmm. I was confused. I had no, like my brain would not retain, like it was just like a blank slate. I started texting Justin every few minutes, like what was happening in life. The book so that I could go back. And it was just, I don't know, it was a combination of factors. I've identified a couple of things that were happening for me. One, there are so many sentence fragments in the book. And I think that it made it a really jilted reading experience for me. I am not a person who's like, never use sentence fragments. I think they have a time and a place and they're great, but they were like everywhere in this book. And it interrupted the flow for me. Like I said, the narrator of the audiobook didn't sound like he was very into the book at all. Martha Wells books typically work for me. And I think her decision to not give any background on anything that was happening. You're just kind of plunged into the story. I think that was a really bold choice, and I don't think it worked because I didn't care about what was happening to anybody. I didn't care about what was happening in the world. Wasn't really clear what was happening in the world. Mm. It was something that was a really bold choice that just fell flat for me.
All right. So Basically, if you are looking, if you think your brain is too wrinkly and you need to smooth it out a little bit, Aline says, read this book.
If you want some smooth brain, this is it.
Okay, Erica, you said you finished it, but you struggled.
What did you think? It's interesting in many of the same ways. I do think it was a bold choice. Jason, as you said, it's told over two time frames.
Yes.
It's the same characters. And that's not entirely clear at first, but like I was the teeniest bit confused at first, but I was hoping it was going to be in a way like the Machineries of Empire books, where I have no idea what's happening, but I'm really interested because I'm learning as I go. And I did sort of sink into the swing of things, and I kind of understood how it was happening. And yeah, I think she was aiming for like, this is a journey of discovery. You are going to learn who these characters are in two different time frames of their lives and the things that are happening to them. But I felt like I was reading a history textbook. And no offense to people who love to read and write history textbooks. They're very important. I just don't like them, and I never have. I don't feel like it was an unwell-written book. Like yes, there were a lot of sentence fragments, and that kind of thing works great in like a Murderbot-style book, but maybe here that was one of the things that I bounced off of. But like, this was just so the most not-for-me thing that I have read in years. This is really funny the way that you described it, Aline, because this is what I put in my Goodreads review. My brain kept slipping off the words and the characters and the story because I just didn't care about any of it. And I was kind of worried for a little while because I don't think I have ever reread sentences and paragraphs and entire pages as many times as I did in the week that I read this book. I was honestly starting to worry that like I've been having brain fog issues because of health things. And I was starting to think, well, this is just what reading's going to be like for me. I have to get used to it. I have to, you know, get used to reading the same pages over and over again. Like I can handle that fine. It sucks, but whatever. But no, thankfully, as soon as I finished this book and started a different one, everything was fine and I could read again. So I think maybe my brain also went smooth because of this book. I don't know. It was just, you mentioned the narrator sounding like he wasn't all that into the book. I kind of felt like the characters themselves, especially the main character, the Witch King, also wasn't particularly into the book either. I didn't feel any warmth or interest or personality from almost any of these characters. It just felt very dull, like I was watching a movie that was old enough that the color had faded out and nobody had restored it. It just felt lifeless to me. And I did keep reading because I kept thinking maybe something wonderful is going to happen at the end and it's all going to come together and it's going to be great. And I will say that maybe it Stockholm syndrome me a little bit. By the end, I kind of cared a little bit more, but not so much that like I feel like I might have spent my time better if I would have stopped at 25 or my usual 33%. Because yeah, I did not enjoy the experience of reading this book.
Okay,
I just
didn't. I think we're going to get some contrasting opinions, but I don't know what Heather thinks, because Heather, remember, just will finish. Heather, what did you think about this one, or at least what have you thought about it so far?
So far, well, you know, I love Murderbot, so I was excited to read this a departure for her. And there were some things I did like about it. I like the gender play that she's doing, that she's doing a lot of mixing up tropes of gender, which I appreciate, and that gender just is a way less important thing in this world. So I appreciate that. I actually liked the structure. I think it worked well to build tension, right? Because you have these two stories and you know they're playing off each other. And as you get deeper into the book, they seem more related to each other. So I liked that. I was very impressed with all the names she made up. Like, oh my gosh, so many names, right? Which is really hard, I think, in world building. And so I really appreciate the creativity of the names. But I don't really disagree with Erica and Aline. I think there was just way too much world building and way too much plot and not enough character. It just takes way too long to begin to care about Kai. You know, and I don't think she opens with, you know, a good inciting incident. I'm 2/3 of the way through and I still don't understand why they were underwater in a tomb. Like, you know, why anyone had done that to them. And so I just think there was, I don't know, I just wish that she'd focused more on characters and that they were fuller and richer much earlier in the book rather than so much focus on the world building and the plot. So it's just harder to care about anything if you don't care, you know, basically if you don't care about Kai. And that just took a while to get going. So those are my thoughts. All and right. I will finish it because I'm in it now and I do want to understand how it's all happening. But I will never say it's like, oh, go read that. Go read more. I'll say, no, go start with Murderbot. Mm. And I'd skip Witch King is probably what I would say to people if I was making a recommendation.
And now in contrast, two people who like this book very much. Let's begin with Scott McNulty, who I believe rated this at 5 stars. Hi, Scott. Indeed, it's just you and me now.
So here's the thing. I don't disagree with what anyone said. And yet, all of those things added up to me enjoying this book because I think that for me, the structure of the book, just I felt like it was this very well-crafted device that I was just impressed with how it worked by the end of it, because the inciting incident, which I found quite interesting, is explained like it. The book is crafted in such a way that it starts and ends at the same, like the two stories converge at the end and explain how they have intermingled in what I felt was a very satisfying way. And I thought it was very well done from kind of a writerly way. So I enjoyed it that way. And I also like Kai, the main character, and I kind of like the fact that they were kind of disconnected from the world because they are, you know, demon.
A fearsome and, demon king. Yes.
And how everyone else is just kind of terrified of them, but also trying to help them and not really knowing what's going on. As the reader also is not really knowing what's going on because there are lots of characters. There's lots of weird things happening. There are hollowed out whales and all kinds of things that are just like, this book can't get any stranger. And then, you know, a golden boat with a golden knight on it shows up and you're like, what is happening? I don't understand what's happening. And yet I enjoy that kind of book where I am reading it and I think, I don't know what's happening, but I trust that by the end of this book, it will make sense. And for me, it made sense and it told a satisfying story that I had not, a similar story I have never read. That was a weird sentence construction of my own.
Perfectly fine, it seemed to me, Scott.
There you go. Thank you. So that's why I enjoyed it so much. And I don't know if I had someone approach me and say, hey, Scott, I'm interested in this Martha Wells. Where should I start? I would, of course, say the Murderbot books because those are the most, you know, accessible and enjoyable. And, you know, if you like those, maybe try Witch King. But if it starts to make you cry about 10% in, maybe stop reading it.
Yeah, don't let it make you cry for any of those reasons. I agree with Scott. I think the second time frame, the flashback time frame, is maybe a little bit too slow, and I think that the book sags toward the end a little bit, although then it picks up. But like Scott, I found, first off, I think the inciting incident, I think the whole beginning of it is a fantastic, like, elevator pitch level kind of thing, which is a murdered demon is freed accidentally and begins his plot for revenge by bit by bit. And this is one of the things that I know I said in the podcast the last time, but it's, well, what do I do? And it's like, well, first escape, then get the guards, you know, and kill them or whatever, then get a boat, then get a bigger boat, then magic whale, sure. And then, you know, and it's sort of like, then find my friends. And then, like, I enjoy that it's sort of like step by step of him getting the band back together. And I also enjoy that Kai is a fearsome, you know, magical figure that everybody should be terrified of, because I do sort of enjoy that is the person we're following, and you get to know them and their origin story from the flashbacks as well. And then, and it does get weirder and weirder. I really definitely preferred the present day story to the flashback story, which is a lot more dense and not as fun to get through. Than the task of finding their revenge. But I think it ends in a fantastic place, as Scott said. you have to pick up this world, and there are things that she withholds because she wants to reveal them in the flashback and then have you go, oh, that's why. And I think it is effective more often than it isn't. And it leads to that last segment of the book, which is taking place in the same physical location before and after, and sort of reveals everything about the predicament that the character got put in and their resolution to their story, which I thought worked really well. So not without flaws, way less accessible than something like the Murderbot series. I think if you go into this because you like the Murderbot series, I think you might be naturally disappointed because stylistically it's so different. But I thought it was great. I really did. It's not the kind of book that I normally gravitate toward, but I thought it was challenging, but I thought it was really well done, and I thought it came together at the end. And I clicked with that whole idea of the kind of murderous demigod on a rampage looking for revenge and going from, you know, place to place to try and find it. So it worked. That propulsion at the beginning, you know, it worked for me. And so then I was in at that point.
I think maybe I went in with expectations that were a little too high because I did love the elevator pitch of this book, because that you know, like somebody came in, woke up a demon, the demon was ticked off about it, kills him, and, you know, needs to figure out, why am I awake now? What's happening? And I was like, yeah, that sounds fascinating. And like the other little, you know, many of the things that you and Scott just mentioned, I was like, yeah, that's interesting. That's like, if somebody were to sit down and tell me about this book, I think that would be really fun. And I agree. Like, I don't disagree with the comments about the way that she crafted the two parts of the story and the way that they sort of wove into each other. And, you know, it was a well-built book that I just didn't enjoy reading. So maybe I'll make a TV show of it sometime and I will love the heck out of that, but I don't want to read the book again.
All right.
That's what I was thinking, Erica. I think it might play for me better visually, where so much of the description can actually be shown on the screen. And I don't often feel that way, but I would totally go to this movie. For some reason, it seems like it would be much more effective for me.
I agree with that.
So there you go, people. I think from that, this is the beauty of the book club. From that, you probably, dear listener, have an idea of whether you want to even attempt this book, because Scott and I are like, here's why we liked it. And we heard why our other panelists did various forms of not finishing it or finishing it under protest. So let that, you know, be your warning and be your guide. And yes, definitely, if it is making you weep with the feeling that you have to read it as you go, stop. We beg you. Aline pushed way further than she should have out of a sense of duty to the podcast.
It was. Yep. I do hope it for you.
Listeners are happy. Mm-hmm. You made Aline
cry. We do it for you. Yeah. Anyway, but I did like it. So you pick your poison. Pick your poison. Okay. That is Witch King by Martha Wells.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Let's talk about Starter Villain by John Scalzi. Here's a change in tone.
Record scratch sound.
This is
writing ability.
Yeah, certainly degree of difficulty too, I would say, is dramatically different here, because this, you may remember, dear listener of book clubs, that this is the book that made me kind of do a rant about how John Scalzi is a very talented writer who should probably challenge himself more, because he has written a couple of books that are extremely low difficulty level, and they're breezy and they're fun, and you can read them in a day or two, like on the weekend, and go, the jokes, the banter, he's so good at kind of wry, you know, his prose moves, he makes some jokes, he's got some satirical flourishes to genre conventions and tropes and all of that. And in this case, it's about a guy who wants to open a bar, but he's basically going broke, and then he inherits his uncle's fortune, but it turns out his uncle was the leader of a supervillain franchise, essentially, and he has to navigate that, and that is the story of Starter Villain, a book that I thought was, as I said on the previous podcast, I thought was perfectly fine and didn't surprise me at any point. And following the Kaiju Preservation Society felt like John Scalzi was not using all of the skills that I know he has, but that it was, again, a perfect, like, I again, I'm going to sound like his English teacher saying, see me after class, I think you need to apply yourself more. But I will say, I have no real complaints about the book. It was fun, and I forgot about it. Other than talking about it on a podcast, I would have forgotten about it immediately because it was kind of insubstantial, but I found it fun and funny, and I've seen all the James Bond movies, so having, you know, a volcano lair supervillain kind of thing was, you know, it was amusing. That's my review of Starter Villain is like, yes, it was perfectly fine. How did you all feel about Starter Villain?
Well, I finished it.
Well, that doesn't mean anything. You finished Witch King.
You're right. That's true. You know, I have to agree. It was fine. I think it was last year I read Kaiju Preservation Society simply because it was nominated. I was not interested in it because I don't like kaiju. And then I ended up liking it and being more impressed by it than I expected to be. I feel like that didn't quite happen this time. It just seemed like it was even more sort of sarcastic and quippy and in your face with that sort of thing in this than it was in like the Kaiju Preservation Society, which makes sense thematically because, you know, we're riffing on Bond films. There's, you know, a lot of silly nonsense quips in those movies, too. So fine. But I felt like that started to grate on me a little bit more than it usually does. Usually that sort of clever, sarcastic, quippy style of writing, I kind of like, and I can like just, you know, ride it like a wave. And this time, like, it was like the waves were a little choppier. So it wasn't quite as much fun of an experience. And I do think I was actually kind of impressed by the plotting because I felt like maybe nothing was terribly surprising, but I did feel like everything fit together like puzzle pieces very well, in kind of the same way that Witch King did, but in a way that like I had more fun reading it this time, maybe also because it was a lot shorter. But yeah, I appreciated the way point A led to point B led to point C, and there were a few things that I didn't quite see coming, mostly because I was just zipping through and reading pretty fast. So I feel like the plotting impressed me more than Kaiju Preservation Society, but the characters impressed me less. I didn't particularly like anybody, including the main character, who just seemed like a schlub with like just not anything going for him in life, and that seemed like it kind of made sense because he hadn't really tried that hard. I don't know. That's how it came across to me. And when it's sort of a first person kind of a book where you're seeing everything through the eyes of the main character and you don't feel super great about that main character, it makes everything else a little bit more difficult. So while I appreciated things like, you know, dolphins that swear a lot and, you know, the idea of talking cats, that should be like a complete shoe-in for me. And yet none of it really hung together enough to make me super duper excited. So I enjoyed this book. I read it pretty fast. Mm-hmm. I think it was okay.
Goes down easy.
I didn't even like it as much as last year's Scalzi entry. So it was fine. It was fine.
It's interesting because I saved this one for last of the three books because I was like, I know what to expect from John Scalzi. I know that it's going to go down easy. It's not going to be deep, and it's going to be like the quippy, bantery, not that serious type of book. And that's what it was. Like, it's just like when I hear John Scalzi has a new book, that's what I think. That's just, he's an author who writes exactly what you think he's going to write because that's what he always writes. And I didn't dislike it. I mean, I liked it. I don't know that I would have read it if it weren't nominated. And I don't want to rehash the, like, what makes something nomination worthy conversation, but also I don't know what made this nomination worthy.
By John Scalzi. So like, that's why.
Yeah. Yeah.
Popular.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was good. It was a fine book. It was a nice little brain cleanser for me after Witch King, but you know, I don't have anything glowing to say about it, which, you know, is
sounds
fine.
About right to me. Heather?
You know, this, excuse me, this is the first time I've actually read him. I'm not quite sure how that happened, but, you know, it's an interesting pairing or tripling with the other two books, which are really quite dense and hardcore science fiction and hardcore fantasy. I think, Aline, you had a great word. I felt like a palate cleanser to me. I thought it was just delightful, just so fun and so easy and such, I think, a great example of really accessible writing, right? Really accessible world building, which is not necessarily the goal, but I had a really, really good time and I haven't finished it yet. This is not one of the ones I finished. I thought it was quicker, would have been a little quicker than, I thought it was going to be quicker than it was, but needless to say, I loved it. In part, the other reason I really loved it is it kept calling to mind the TOS, the Star Trek TOS episode Assignment Earth. So I just kept having these kind of flashes of the cat and the spies and the villains, and which was really fun. So I was a little offended by the, you know, the dolphins talking about dogs and treats and pats on the head, but I'm a dog person. But I thought it was really fun. However, I do say, wait a minute, this is a Hugo, and is that what those are supposed to be about? So I get that whole part of it, and I will read some more of his books. And if you guys, you know, if he can do more heavy lifting than this, I would love to read. I mean, has he written books that are more of what you would say, you know, for more utilization of his skills and talents?
Yeah, I would say that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will get recommendations from you then on those.
I mean, honestly, I think you could read
Old Man's War.
Old Man's
War. Yeah, Old Man's War. And also, since you like Star Trek, I would say read Red Shirts.
Red Shirts?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Which is a Star Trek takeoff.
It is just a Star Trek parody, sort of, that gets serious at the end. But his, like, in terms of like an actual sci-fi novel, that Old Man's War and that whole series is actually quite good.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes. Scott, you know, I think you, I suspect you join me in the disappointment category of this. How did you feel about Starter Villain?
I will say, first off, that it is very difficult to write a breezy, entertaining book. And John Scalzi is very good at doing that. So I will say that if you're looking for a breezy, entertaining read, you should pick this up. It's fun. It'll take you, you know, maybe a day or two to read, and you will enjoy yourself. In the lens of it being amongst nine other books that we are reading for the Hugo and Nebula Awards, this book is one joke told repeatedly. And I kind of got tired of it about halfway through. But it was very quick, so it was over before I could really develop any serious dislike for it. And much like Erica, So here's the thing, right? This book is set in a world where James Bond and those things exist. So the main character knows all the tropes and yet is still an idiot and cannot guess these things are going to happen to him. And why? Because it's funnier that way. But it also makes him annoying because he can't figure out what's going on. And there are a couple of twists that I can excuse anyone for not figuring out. But there are a lot of stuff that's kind of obvious and he doesn't figure it out. And it just annoyed me. And he's also not the most pleasant person.
So I was going to say one of the things that struck me about this protagonist also is that ultimately nothing happens in this book because of him. He really is just along for the ride, because at the end, one of the revelations is like basically like, oh, no, we were controlling it the whole time and you can go back to your life now. And it's like he's been on a little Disneyland ride of so you've inherited your uncle's supervillain fortune. But at the end, he's just deposited at the gift shop and that's it. And so it's like it's already not much of a character. And then the character has no impact on the story, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I know John Scalzi can do much better and more interesting things. And once again, I am not denigrating the level of effort it takes to write a book, any book, really, totally. To get published
and skill.
By a publisher.
He's a very skilled writer, and I think he wanted to write a book like this, and he nailed it. He wrote exactly, I think, the book he intended to write here. I'm not trying to denigrate him. Like I said, and I've said a couple of times now, I just think that he's got more in him. And if this is what he wants to write, then so be it. But like, I'd really like every other book that he writes or every third book that he writes to be like, let's bite off something and challenge myself, because I think he could do like way more interesting, complex things when he wants to. But like, obviously he didn't want to.
He doesn't want to. Yes. Yeah. And I do not shy away from being mean about books that I have read. And I'm mostly not being as mean as I could be, because I know that John Scalzi can write really good things. And for whatever reason, he is writing these things, probably because, you know, he wants to make money. And these sell books. And that, no shade there. No. Hey, man, make all the money you want.
Good for him.
He bought a church. Like, he's got things. Maybe he is a super villain. He's turning himself into a super villain.
I was thinking about Stephen King, right, who is on a whole other level from John Scalzi, but I think similar in the sense that I feel like Stephen King writes some books because he's sort of like, this is what people want from me. I'm going to give them what they want. And then other books he writes, and he's like, this one's for me. I'm interested in the subject, or it's going to challenge me, or it's something that I'm not used to doing. And I feel like that gets mixed in. And it may just be a fluke of, with the pandemic and Scalzi abandoned apparently a much more kind of dour work that he was working on and decided to do bright and fun, that maybe it's just a matter of timing that his last two books have been this kind of frothy stuff. But I just, you know. But he's good at it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think part of it is he's talented. He thinks of a slightly amusing thing, and then suddenly he's written a book.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, quite a power, in fact, for him to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Starter Villain. Available where all books are sold. Let's move on. In airports,
where
probably.
Are all
this
books
would be a good
sold?
Book for an airport.
It's a perfect plane ride.
Yeah,
book.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Oh, John Scalzi, let me blurb that one.
The perfect plane ride book.
Yeah, a good book for an airport. 3 stars. You don't want a 4 or 5 star book at an airport. It's too much.
No. Yep.
3 stars. Goes down easy. Good book for an airport. Hey, everybody. I just want to remind you that you are listening to the non-member version of the Incomparable Mothership. We have a membership. It's ad-free. It's got extra stuff in it at the beginning and end, usually, of every episode, where we've got stuff to say that doesn't make it in, doesn't make the cut. Lots of other bonuses by being a member, too. You get access to our Discord community, which is really great. You get access to bootlegs immediately after live sessions are recorded. We post the unedited bootleg so you can listen to that without waiting. And, of course, the special edition episodes come out early. Like I said, with no ads and extra material. And there are more bonuses all across the network. Check out theincomparable.com/members to learn more.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first 3 orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let us move on to a more complex work. It is Translation State from the Imperial Raj universe that we learned about in Ancillary Justice and fourth and other books in that series. And then suddenly Anne Leckie is back with another one in that same universe, which is why it's very interesting that it starts out like, again, it's a science fictional world, but it's sort of an episode of like Murder, She Wrote.
It is
a little, I mean, Scott can judge, because Scott is an expert on Murder, She Wrote, but it's a little bit like there's a character who like is just working, and there's another person passes away and there's an inheritance, but in this case it's your inheritance is you need to be a detective and find a missing person. And
who's been missing for hundreds of years and is probably dead.
And it's like, but I've just been happy in the estate here. It's like, well, sorry, the estate's been sold and you don't work here anymore taking care of your grandmother. And so now you must become a detective. And so our character, Ine, who goes by her, which is it's unique pronouns because Anne Leckie always wants to play with people's expectations of pronouns and gender, and it happens here too. Our main character has to go to other planets and investigate other things, which leads to a fascinating unraveling story. And you're like, well, why is this even set in this universe? And the answer is, one of the weirdest things in the other books in the series, the concept of the Presker translator, these people who got taken away by this almost unknowable alien adversary, because it's mostly humans in the universe in these books, at least that we focus on. But there are aliens out there and they're super powerful, but have a peace treaty that nobody wants to break because the humans are convinced that if they break them, the Presker will just destroy them. But they have like humans that they took away and maybe genetically engineered, and they kind of look like humans, but they're also kind of weird and alien. And our character stumbles into kind of a plot where there's a character who thinks that they're a person, but then they have a very disturbing puberty that leads to the discovery that they are actually a Presker translator, essentially a weird alien with weird skills. And that leads to a diplomatic incident involving aliens and what should be done with these people who are raised as humans but might actually not be humans after all. And it gets it goes from being sort of like, oh, I can't work at the house anymore, I guess I will do some research into somebody's old 200-year-old records for missing people, and rapidly spins apart into a diplomatic incident involving super weird humans that are kind of aliens. That's Translation State, everybody.
It's so good.
Yeah.
I loved this book so much, and I worried going into it. I didn't have time to reread any of the other Imperial Rock books. So I was worried going into it. But this, thank God, I didn't need to. This was not a Gideon Harrow Nona situation. I was able to just pick it up. And this book gave me what I needed to know to exist in this world. And one of the things about Ine as a character that I really liked is that, yes, there's this this new job that you get to track down this thing, but the undercurrent is that nobody actually expects you to do this job. It's just a title. You can go from planet to planet, and nobody's going to blink. And basically, this is your inheritance. But because of Ine is the kind of person who's like, I can't be still. I need to actually do this. So
competent
working
for
on
their
that,
own good.
Yes. And then you have the sort of two other point of view characters that we get sort of more of as the book goes on. And Reet is the second one who thinks they're a person and then later finds out they're not exactly. And like he just wants to get by and do it, have a job and go to work and have a normal life. Yep.
And think about eating people.
Well, no, and yeah, not see? Think about eating people. That's important. That's important not to think about that because it sounds so good sometimes. Weird. And then you also get Kven, who is legitimately a Presker translator.
Yes.
And you get to see the world through these three completely different points of view. And I just felt like it was just masterfully done how all of these characters were characters that I was interested in, and they saw the world in vastly different ways. And I understood so much more about the world that they live in based on seeing it through their eyes and experiencing it through their emotions, which were very weird and confusing to the other characters as they like all, you know, intermingled eventually. It was just, I have really, really enjoyed all of Anne Leckie's books that I've read. And this might even be my favorite. It was just so good. I'm not a huge rereader, but I feel like I might go back and reread this one at some point because it was just such a delight to play in this world and see it from all these different perspectives and just it's been a long time since I've read something where I felt like I was being put inside the mind of somebody who was so completely alien to me, just like literally and figuratively, and it made sense. It was like, oh, I totally get why you want to eat people now. Like that makes logical sense to me based on the upbringing that you were supposed to have. Like it was amazing. I loved it.
Can I enthuse after Erica? Anne Leckie is like one of my author heroes. I have loved everything she's written, and she inspires me all the time as I try to do some writing. And I had a chance to have a long conversation with her at Comic-Con one year where there was, I guess I was the first one there and there just wasn't anyone in line for autographing. So we got to chat for about 15 minutes. It was amazing. She's an incredible person. She was very encouraging. But I just, okay, so in all of this eating people and weird people and all of this, and it's a love story, right? Like it's this love story. And in the end, you're like rooting for these two young kids to kind of merge into each other. But the way she handles the ambivalence of it all and, you know, their ambivalence about doing this thing that they really want to do, but will they lose themselves? I mean, honestly, it's just like human beings struggling with falling in love. So I just love that there's somehow in all of this eating people or this wanting to, there was this gentle, sweet love story. I just felt like you rooted for these characters right away. One of the things I also just felt so satisfying was getting into these characters that were so mysterious in this universe, in this other world. So how she's just kind of opening up more and more in such effective ways, this universe of hers is just really fun. And I felt like I was kind of spying, you know, like, ooh, I get to see into these mysterious places. And then she does this beautiful, subtle satire all the time, which it's just unlike Scalzi, which is right in your face, which is what, of course, I'm sure he intends. But the subtlety of how she does commentary on our social stuff is amazing. So. And I think she's an author that has challenged herself. Every single book has, you know, she's working craft really hard. And I mean, not in a way that I think you notice, but I don't know if people read the Rock book, which was like, what, her fourth book? Did people read the Rock book? The present tense, first person book she wrote?
I thought I had read everything she did, but I don't. That doesn't ring a bell.
I'll look it up. So, and I'll give you the name, but she wrote like the novel she wrote right after she finished with the Ancillary Justice trilogy is a first person.
This is the Raven
present
Tower.
Tense book.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah. No, I loved that. I loved.
Yeah.
Raven
oh, no.
Yeah.
I haven't.
Like, oh my gosh. So anyway. Yes, I agree with what Erica said. Just as enthusiastically. Love this book. We'll probably reread it.
Yeah. I read this one first because I did not have high hopes. I did not like the first three books in this universe. Did not like Ancillary Ooh. Justice. And it's, I know.
Sorry, I just felt a little pain there. I had to.
It's just so, it's so rare that we disagree on books that every time, like when it happens, it's just like, gasp.
But that's what and makes entertainment, right?
And I talked about this, I think some of my first podcasts on The Incomparable were talking about these books. So, but I have wondered if I listened to them because I know I eyeball read them. I wonder if I listened to them, if I would like them better, because I loved The Raven Tower and I really, really loved this book too. So I'm just wondering if it was another brain format mismatch and, I pushed through when maybe I shouldn't have, but I just, it was sweet. Like,
yeah.
And the way that cannibalism is introduced is just like it's such a non thing, right? Like I think about eating people sometimes, and I shouldn't yeah. do that, and I shouldn't talk about that. And then you get to the other perspective where she's like, yeah, sometimes we get eaten, and it's just a thing. There was a point when I was listening to it where I was like laughing out loud, snorting, because they're basically like in a courtroom talking about how many people have been cannibalized. And one of the Preska translators is like, this person has eaten untold numbers of people. And so they're going on with the conversation, and every once in a while, or every few lines, it cuts back to her, and she's like mentally tallying the number of people that she's eaten. And I don't, there's something about the way that was delivered that just absolutely delighted me. And then, of course, I'm trying to explain to my husband that I'm laughing about cannibalism.
Yeah, it's a lot.
And he's like, I don't know what's happening. So.
I knew you were going to talk about that scene. I love that scene.
I loved it so much. So it was so funny.
And also, you get the sense of the satisfaction they would have if they got to eat someone, or when they eat someone, which is like, how is this happening in my brain?
People are delicious. I will agree with everyone and say that it's a great book. I gave it 5 stars. And I enjoy the fact that she is gathered. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff that happens in this, but part of it is the conclave has been called because the AIs want to be recognized, right? And so that gives her a chance to throw all these other kind of ambassadors into the mix and have a lot of, you know, we get to see some Radich people and some mechanical people that we don't, there's somebody in that suit, but we don't know who. And so it gives her a lot to play with. And then we have this kind of sweet, weird love story between these two sweet, weird characters. and I think it really works.
And our nice, you know, kind of retired aunt who is the who's like inciting action of all of this, just like she's our Jessica Fletcher, Scott.
Yes, and people are telling her, stop doing this.
Yeah, right? Just, but she can't help it.
Submit your expenses and stop.
She's a diligent... Okay, here's another thing that I liked about... Why I always enjoy that character is... That character is a relentlessly competent person who is going to do, like, again, the job that is crafted for them is a job they're not supposed to do. They're literally, it is make work to give them a nice pension to just go off and not be at the house anymore. And that the grandma has taken care of them and it's all fine. But I think we know people like this. Some of us are people like this. Just aren't wired that way, where it's like, well, no, you gave me a job. I'm going to do the job. I'm a competent person who's always going to like do what I'm asked to do because I can't just sit around. And, you know, again, galaxy spanning ramifications ensue from this, but because this main character will not stop pulling on those threads, and it ends up in a real mess of a situation where a weird character, or at least weird kind of character from one of those previous books that at the time we're like, boy, they're weird. It's like, this book is like, you have no idea how weird they are.
It's really weird.
It's so much stranger than you even thought, which is just a great elaboration on that part of the world. But I love that it's just because our main character is gonna get to the bottom of this thing, and it's a mess. And then the background, you mentioned the AI conclave. That's such a great thing, because if you've read the other books, you know how important the minds of the ships are, and there are all these questions about the identity of these living creatures, because our main character in Ancillary Justice is the remnant of an AI. So here it's sort of like just a little thing that's in there, a little tidbit for all of those of you who remember those other books. This is relevant for that. Yeah,
I read this one the longest ago, which is why like I had sort of completely forgotten about that, the AI part, because that was my favorite part of the Imperial Rock, like the Ancillary series, was the bits and pieces with the AI and whether or not ships should be seen as people. So the fact that that is sort of low key happening in the background of this book was really exciting to me. And then I forgot it because, you know, eating people is a little more exciting.
doomed teen romance, except the doomed teen romance is that they might eat each other or become or lose their identities by becoming bonded and create a new individual that uses both bodies but is not a right, like, just what a wild idea. It's again sort of like the ship mind with the ancillaries is essentially where the characters may end up, let's put it that way. So there's a lot. I mean on one level this is enjoyable because it is some very familiar traditional stories, the older aunt who's going to solve a mystery, you know, again, mm-hmm. Murder, She Wrote, and the star-crossed lovers, really a kind of a Romeo and Juliet-esque kind of way in some cases. But boy, does it get off the rails from there in a delightful sci-fi kind of way. So it's good. It's good. Mm-hmm. I honestly didn't expect more Imperial Rauch series books from Anne Leckie. I mean, and what I've liked is that the books that she's done have not been a new trilogy where mm-hmm. like we're gonna do another trilogy like we did the Ancillary series. It's not that. It's sort of like she's written a couple of standalone books in the universe about like tangents to what was in that trilogy. Mm-hmm. And I think that's I think that's
my favorite. That's my favorite thing when an author has done so much work to build out their universe and do their world building so well that, and most importantly, they don't show all of their homework in their like first trilogy. So like, yes. You know, I'm sure there's the temptation to weigh it down with everything that I have created. And she didn't do that. And so there are all of these like places that she can color, you know, in little spots over here and over there. And I just, whenever an author has a world like that, that it's just so big and vast that they can do different types of books about different types of things that maybe tangentially touch the big trilogy and maybe don't, that's my favorite thing. Right. So I hope that she continues to occasionally dip back into this universe and tell stories about just randos. Yeah. I just want to hear about randos in this world.
It's cool. Yeah, it's because for the previous book, Provenance was essentially about, it's an Imperial Rauch book, but it's like about stolen merchandise. It's sort of what yep. it is. Again, it's like,
and
okay,
it's good.
Sure. Yeah, it was great.
And even more impressive, she's still moving the story forward, right? So the AIs now are arguing to be citizens, right? Which is
right.
Again, taking the big arc of this universe forward, even in this kind of side corner story, mm-hmm. which is really satisfying as a reader, right? It just like feels so good to have more of the big arc in this little tiny arc. So another reason I love her so much.
Very nice. All right. Well, that's three books. I guess I should say we're going to do What Are We Reading? But I will, before we do that, I will give the names of the books we're going to read next. We're going to read three more nominees. We're going to read Some Desperate Glory, The Terraformers, and Shigidi and the Brass Head of Obalophon next time. Those are the three books. So get them on your list. Everybody start preparing because this book club continues to roll on. But now it's
rolls
time.
And rolls.
It won't stop.
For What Are won't We Reading? probably mostly Hugo and Nebula nominees. But if you've got one or two that you want to throw out there, now would be a great time to do it. Aline?
I will talk about two series.
Okay.
So the first is Belladonna by Adeline Grace. It's supposed to be a trilogy. There are only two of the books out currently. The third one's coming out this year, I think. It's about a girl as a baby. She's at a party. Everybody dies except her. Death forms an attachment to her and kind of follows her throughout her life. And I believe the main storyline picks up when she's 19. And we get to find out why everybody dies. And she forms a relationship with death, which I think is a really interesting thing. And there's a little bit of murder mystery in there. It's a little bit of kind of a gothic vibe. And I really liked it. Like, why does death like a 19-year-old? Death has been around forever. Like, what is happening? So I enjoy that series. And then the other one is the Regency Fairy Tales. And there are currently three books in a novella. I don't know if more books are planned. This is by Olivia Atwater. And it's kind of a Regency London with magic. And they're all romances, but they're sweet and they're interesting. I like We don't learn about like the magic system so much, but there's some of it takes place in our world or an analog to our world. Some of it takes place in fairy. And I like the way that these worlds kind of intersect and interact, and what rules that we think of for fairy actually apply in this particular universe and what don't. I liked it a lot. So yeah, those are two series I recommend.
Very nice. Erica?
I can't remember. I think maybe I mentioned previously that I had been starting to work my way through the Grishaverse Shadow and Bone books, and including all of the like interstitial shorter fiction. I have been reading like literally everything in like publication order because I'm that nerd. And it's been really fun. And I recently got to the end of Ruin and Rising, which is the third book in the big Shadow and Bone trilogy. And I really enjoyed it. I cannot wait for Six of Crows to come in at my library, but my hold is in the hundreds, so it'll be a while. Wow. I'll have plenty of time to read more award finalists mm-hmm. in the interim. But I really I appreciate that the quality of the prose and like the depth of the world building for this world has increased with every book. So if you like magic and geopolitical intrigue and romance and legends and class-based struggle and flying ships, these books are for you. So and especially if you like the TV show, but do not expect the books to go the same direction as the TV show, because they don't, which is fun because it's like two separate things. And then the other thing that I was reading while I was waiting for the Hugo packet to come out, come on Hugo packet, was System Collapse, the latest Murderbot book, which Martha Wells chose to decline the Hugo nomination for. And, you know, I can't fault her for wanting to put forward a fantasy work. I think before she started doing Murderbot, most of her work was fantasy. So,
yeah.
You know, wanting to put that up there. Fine. I'm only partway through, but I'm enjoying it just as much as I have enjoyed the other Murderbot books. So I don't know. I guess maybe this makes my Hugo voting easier, because I know where I'm putting Witch King, and I would probably have more trouble if it was System Collapse. So there you go. If you like Murderbot, keep reading Murderbot.
All right. Heather?
I've been reading Martha Wells' Witch King and John Scalzi's Starter Villain.
Yeah. I hear that.
So, yeah. So I'm going to finish both of those, and I will try to have something interesting and new for the next time we discuss books.
And Scott, what about you?
I have just recently read a book called Maul Goes to War by Edward Ashton, who wrote Mickey 7 and the sequel, which I can't remember the name of, Mickey something or other, sure.
Yeah.
Soon to be a major motion picture.
Yes, indeed.
And I mean, if you like Mickey 7, you will probably like Maul Goes to War. It is about surely inspired by Murderbot, it is about a sarcastic AI who is sentient and wants to hop around in humans' bodies just to experience the physical world. Unfortunately, there's a war going on between the Federals and the humanists, and he gets mixed up in the conflict. Things happen. And to get a sense of if you would like it or not, there is a scene in which the AI has possessed someone and is complaining that he doesn't have a nice name. And the person says, well, Maul is surely short for something. What is it short for? And he says, malware. And the person goes, oh, yeah, just go with Mal. So, you know, that kind of humor is it's fun and short.
All right. And for me, I am going to say I read Paladin of Souls by Lois McMaster-Bujold. I think last time I said I had read Curse of Chalion, largely because I then wanted to read Paladin of Souls, and I did. And it won the Hugo, Locus, and Nebula Awards for Best Novel in 2004. It is a fantasy novel about an older woman. She's the mother of one of the key characters in Curse of Chalion. She's had her curse lifted. Spoilers for the Curse of Chalion, it's lifted at the end. And she goes on, she's tired of being like managed by a kind of like court manager at her castle. And she wants to live a little because she's not really lived her life. And she goes out on the road and you're thinking, oh, well, I'm sure this will be uneventful as she travels across the countryside, going on various religious pilgrimages to various places of interest. But you know what? Trouble. There's trouble out there, maybe even some magical trouble. and she has to deal with it. And I thought it was good. I get why it was nominated and won awards, because it's really fun. Lois McMaster Bujold, this is not a, not news, is a good writer. And the best thing of all is I have now read every Hugo-winning novel since 1992, having closed that gap.
Impressive.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's still, you know, now I gotta go back from there. But I have now closed the biggest gap back to 1992. So I'm feeling good about that. Paddle of the Souls, it's good. Those Chalian books, I mean, I know people talk about the Four Kosigans. They're great. But the two Chalian books, and then there's also a series of novellas that are apparently pretty good that I have not read yet that I will. And I've told the story before, but I went to a reading by Lois McMaster Bujold at a Worldcon, and I discovered that half the people there cared about Four Kosigan, and the other half cared about some fantasy series that I'd never heard of and I didn't care about, which is, of course, The World of the Five Gods. It's Chalian, which now I've read the books of, although what I hear is the Penric series of novellas is also very good, and I should read
those. I've only read the Penric books, but I've really liked them.
Well, the two novels are good. The novels are good.
Everything I've written by her, I've really enjoyed. And I think I've read all of her novels and all of her novellas at this point.
She is great. That's my review. Raves, Jason Snell, literally raves. Not breaking any ground there. Anyway, good book. And my Hugo walk through the past continues. And that brings us to the end of this episode. Again, remember everybody, Some Desperate Glory, The Terraformers, and Shigidi and the Brass Head of Balafon will be our... So that's what seems like a YA sci-fi novel. And then I can just say, it's not what it seems. You think that you know exactly what the book is when you start it, Some Desperate Glory, and it is not that. The Terraformers, which is a big scope story with some, I thought, delightful twists that happen, where there are moments that where you turn the page and you think, what? That were really kind of a delightful, big kind of like widescreen future humans on a planet, thousands of years of scope in some ways. And I know Scott, I read Shigidi before it got nominated because Scott recommended it to me. It's like a gods and devils do a heist.
That's it.
I mean, that's what it is. So check those out if you are interested.
I've read a short story in the Terraformers universe because it was in Uncanny Magazine, and it was interesting. So I'm interested to read a bigger story, literally bigger, because the story was about worms,
much larger. So that's next time. Those three books. Check them out. Ooh. Check out the books that we are also recommended. Check out the books we talked about this time if you weren't repelled by them, but instead intrigued. And that's up to you. We aren't going to judge because we can't hear you. This podcast only goes the one way. But we'll be back for more. I mean, there's a whole, I should say, if you want to become an Incomparable member, there's a whole What Are We Reading section in the books area of our member Discord. It's really great. Shout out to everybody in the Discord and in the books conversation. It's really fun to see the books that people are reading and there are conversations about them. So if you want to become a member, theincomparable.com/members, we'll get you in there. And you can support the show too. But that was an unexpected plug that I just did, but I did it. There it is.
Yes.
Take that.
That's kind.
Because it's fun to see the book talk in there. All right. We will be back next week with another episode of The Incomparable. And in, I don't know, a month-ish to talk about more books. But until then, let me thank my panelists. Aline Sims, thank you for being here.
I hope I don't cry next time.
I hope not. Eric Ensign, books.
Book, because there were three this time.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Fair enough. Heather Berbera, thank you for being here.
I am going to read all of them next time, all the way through.
Okay.
I mean,
unless they make you cry, in which case you should stop.
Please stop.
In which case, I'm going to follow the new rule: don't read books that make you cry in a bad way.
Yeah, exactly right. That's the key factor there. And Scott McNulty, thank you as always.
My secret is I'm crying all the time.
That's right. And thanks to everybody out there for listening to this episode. We will see you next time.